Hello everyone, welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sider, joined by my co-host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow me on Twitter, at eSider, and you can follow Brent on Twitter, at BrendanKleen14. We're joining you on a special Friday episode. We're doing 3 days a week in the offseason for you guys, just so you guys know ahead of time. But we're back once again with our third installment of our draft prospect debates. Our first one was Luka Doncic versus DeAndre Ayton. Then we had Marvin Bagley versus Jaren Jackson. I'm actually excited for this one today, too, with two wing prospects who are almost identical on everyone's boards, because I know I have probably Michael Porter a little higher than you. I know you have Mikal Bridges higher than me. So this should be an interesting debate today with two really opposite wing prospects. So before we dive in, just what's your thoughts on both these prospects? I know like they're very intriguing from the outside looking in.
Yeah, I think Bridges is actually somebody who's kind of jumped up a little bit for me. It's tough. Like, I think the same thing's kind of happening with Jalen Brunson, where Villanova was so good this year that to me, it's really tough to just discount that and judge them solely on kind of their statistical profiles or their game. I think for two reasons. One is that they had such an incredible team that fit together so well that I think not all of the players, probably Brunson was kind of operating at full capacity, but I think someone like Bridges could have been doing a little bit more and would have been doing a little bit more on a worse team with less scoring options. And then also, I mean, they were just so good that you kind of have to factor that in. It's rare that we see a college team be that dominant, and so I think you do have to kind of try to account for it at least when you're judging Bridges. Able to be the best defender on the best team in the country says something, and he might have even been the best offensive player quietly as well. So that has to really mean something, I think, too. So as I've kind of thought about him more after the season, that's why he's risen so much for me. And what we'll probably end up getting into the most is like kind of hard to peg really what you can take away from this season, but I think that, you know, he kind of does slide a little bit for me just because whatever health concerns there are, but also we don't really know what he really was able to get better at this year with that back injury and the restricted playing time he got as a result.
Yeah, I'm going to actually kick this off with Michael Porter because I feel like a lot more people are on the radar with him as far as if they go maybe number three, number four in the draft. I've been – MPJ's number four on my board. I moved him down one spot after watching more Triple J. I'm kind of all in on Triple J's number three prospect now. But looking at Michael Porter Jr., his advanced stats, I really don't want to take any merit into him just because he was so injured. It seemed like he wasn't – honestly, he wasn't really the same guy at all compared to how he was in AAU in high school. And you could tell by a lot of his advanced stats, he's a negative assist-to-turnover ratio, which – that's kind of a big negative to him as well if you're looking from the outside looking in. I think negative turnover ratio, his bad. He has an underwhelming handle for a wing, especially one of his height. And I was looking at his high school box score stats, trying to find some of those. And he made a lot of jump shots, but I noticed a lot of times he really refused to get contact. He really didn't draw a lot of fouls per game. He took about 25 shots a game. And he only went to the line about six times a game. So that kind of tells you something on the surface there as far as maybe him avoiding contact and going to the – maybe selling more for jump shots, so to say. So what's your thoughts on Michael Porter and how he – I know, obviously, you really can't take much in the Missouri this season. He only played three games, and he looked not even close to how he was in high school. But there's obviously some red flags that really need to be considered with him.
I think the ball handling and kind of like – I don't know, getting at what you brought up with the foul numbers. And I just think it kind of all fits into – really what the package he's bringing on offense is, which again, like we're going to continue to say, I mean, we'll just kind of probably throw it out and then stop talking about it. It's tough to really say something specific about two games, considering I know neither you or I really could have been watching him too much in high school, but it's like from what we have seen and then statistically what we can kind of break down, he's not going to be a primary ball handler. And not only is he not going to be like primary ball handler, you think of like a point guard, but he's also, you know, really not ready to be the wing scoring type of primary ball handler either. Because I just don't think he has enough feel with the ball in his hands to create an efficient look on offense, like, you know, 30, 40 times a game. That's just, you know, and it not only is it obviously, you know, very few people do that as a rookie, but that doesn't seem to be likely for him early in his career. That's sort of where I start with him, where he's kind of fallen for me a little bit, because I think if you're taking somebody with that diverse potential on offense, you'd like that part of his game to come a little bit more quickly, but he's just not good enough ball handler and not an aggressive enough playmaker for me to really feel good about him doing that, like we've seen with somebody like Jason Tatum, who I think is a comp he's been getting, as well as, you know, Kevin Durant, just guys in that mold. Those are all special number one option type guys, and I just don't know if Porter projects to me as someone who can get there in the first few years of his career.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought Kevin Durant there, because I was going to bring that point up as well. Just, he got a lot of comps in high school to Kevin Durant, but when you look at his height, you look at his wingspan, he's more like a Josh Jackson type. Jackson had a 6'8 height, 6'10 wingspan. Porter also only has a 2-inch additional wingspan compared to his height at 7 foot, compared to 6'10 for his additional height. But standing reach at 9 feet, and I think, honestly, he projects more like a, I don't know, it's weird to say, but I feel like he's more of a modern-day big man than he is a wing. Do you feel like that same sentiment? Because I feel like you could use him more maybe at a stretch four, maybe even a small ball death line at five at points if he ever develops on defense. That's why you need probably a really stalwart defensive coach. But I feel there's a lot of untapped potential with Porter, especially at the four and the five.
I agree. I definitely think that. I'm critical for fansided here soon, now that we're out of the craziness of the school year, but also the NBA season, to kind of like take a step back. And I want to look at guys that are best suited, like first round prospects for playing really, really super small ball fives. And I think he obviously is the guy that jumps out immediately as that kind of guy, just because, I mean, honestly, one of the things that I really felt like that did change for me from my initial impression through the two games that we did see of him this season were about his rim protection. I think as a weak side rim protector, he showed some interesting stuff, especially in that conference champion or conference tournament game. I think he had a few blocks in that game, and I think that's a big reason why I feel much better about him at the four or the five. I don't think he necessarily has the defensive instincts and foot speed to guard someone like use the same guys that he's getting compared to and think about how he would look defending them. Not really a pretty image there. And I think against a four like Marquise Chris or something like that, he's going to have a much easier shot. So for on both ends of the ball, I think he presents matchup problems as a four or a five, obviously. And then I think his defensive job is a little bit easier. It's just he hasn't really played that role up through his whole career. So asking him to suddenly rebound and be focused on blocking is a little bit bigger of an adjustment for him than focusing on handling and passing, which are things he's really probably known he had to work on for his whole life.
I heard this comp recently by someone. I was listening to, I think, the Ringer podcast by Kevin O'Connor and Jonathan Jark's draft class, and they brought up an interesting comparison for Porter, and it was maybe on the negative spectrum for him, and it was Andrew Wiggins, just because he really lacks, he's not like Kevin Durant in that sense of he's a plus, not really a plus passer. He lacks that passing vision. And he really, if you look at his high school, like I mentioned earlier, his box score stats, he was rather inefficient. He put up like 25, 30 shots a game. So do you feel like maybe he's just a longer version of Andrew Wiggins with more defensive potential? Because I feel like maybe people aren't going to bite on that uber athletic wing anymore after the failed experiment of Wiggins.
I don't really love that, actually. I mean, I think without actually watching him in high school, to me, it's like, I don't know what those 25 shots look like. I think I went to high school with Marcus Howard, who's one of the best scorers in the league at Marquette now. And I'm sure just based on memory, he was shooting the ball at least 25 times a game, but they won, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he took that many shots. So that's like, I don't know, is that really an inefficient player, or is that just one of the best basketball players in the country doing what those guys do? I mean, and then, you know, trying to translate that to what we actually saw this year from him, the thing that stands out to me is I think the shot selection that Porter employs is much better even as a college player than where Wiggins tended to go, which were inefficient drives, very rarely looks to pass, and still that's a problem for him. I just think Porter being somebody who can take threes willingly and then at least looks to kind of be an offensive piece more than an isolation scorer. Just, I don't know. I think that he has the makings of a much better modern player to me than Wiggins. Plus, I mean, just physically, he has the potential to be much more versatile than Wiggins, who kind of we all knew would be a tweener wing, especially without that jump shot.
Now, I wonder this with Ryan McDonough, the general manager of the Phoenix Suns, because he brought this up in last year's press conference when they introduced Josh Jackson. He mentioned maybe he was falling on some boards out of the top three, like Tatum was getting more rising and even Lonzo Ball was really consensually rising above him in the draft process. But McDonough brought up a really interesting point in his press conference, and was there's no doubt about it, Josh Jackson was the best player in high school. Look at his rankings. So if you look at Michael Porter, he was damn near the consensus on every single list coming out of high school. And if you look at that, how much do you think the Suns value that as far as looking at his high school and seeing maybe he's in a better position? And honestly, Missouri with Quanzo Martin, I feel like wasn't the best fit for him. And I just feel like on the NBA skill level, I feel like he really transits a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, I remember before the before Bagley reclassified and Porter decommitted from Washington, it was like, I mean, a long time ago, it was like, well, what if Marquise Chris stays? What if DeJounte Murray stays at Washington? They could really be impressive in a couple of years. And then now all of a sudden we're in a position where the coach there got fired. Well, Markel Fultz is the other guy, I guess. Coach got fired. He left. He got injured. Marvin Bagley reclassified. DeAndre Ayton went in college. Trae Young the same. Jaren Jackson kind of popped off a little bit. Now, yeah, like you're saying, Porter's kind of just fallen. And I don't know, the people that I trust that kind of have a feel for it have kind of been leading me to believe that the injuries really won't change what teams think of him. I think we'll probably get a better idea of that as, you know, teams get him in there and start to talk. But I don't think that's a big change. So I don't know what is, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at. Like, if the injuries don't scare you and he really just missed the season, I think, you know, the only reason that I set him back a little bit is because these other guys had a whole year to improve and he didn't. And there's very clear things he needs to get better at, and, you know, he just didn't have that opportunity.
Not from a fit point of view, I wanted to bring this with Porter and Phoenix because I think it makes actually really intriguing from this point of view, because you could have Michael Porter as a stretch four, even like we mentioned early in the podcast. You could play him as a death lineup stretch five at some spots if you wanted to. And I feel like that kind of fits the versatile mold that McDonough wants to build this roster around, right? Because I know, like, we value guys like Jaren Jackson, Luka Doncic, but I feel like maybe the third guy on that list would be Michael Porter, just because outside maybe those two other guys, he's probably the most unique one to build out the future of the Suns.
I do. I think that he fits really, really well next to Booker and Jackson. I think, though, if you were the Suns and took Porter in, you would be kind of, I don't know, it would be difficult to create a situation in which Bender or Chris fits on the court at the same time as Porter. I just don't really love the fit there. I think Bender maybe could. A lot hinges on his defense in almost every situation we talk about, continuing to take big steps forward through his third and fourth seasons. If that happens, I think Porter and him could work on the court together. But as it stands now, I would be really worried about doing that. And maybe that would, you know, kind of change how they approach the rest of the summer, acquiring more veteran front court talent. But offensively, next to Booker and Jackson, who are still the core two, the ones you're building around most if you're the Suns, he's an awesome guy there for sure. I mean, kind of solves a lot of the problems from a spacing and scoring perspective.
Yeah, and I, from looking at the top of the draft once more, I think maybe even more than so than Luka Doncic, I feel like maybe he's the best pure shooter in this class. And looking at the Suns' advanced metrics over the last 5 years, they have not crossed into the top 15 as far as three-point percentage goes and really three-point rate. So do you feel like if they're targeting just shooters only, find the shooter next to Booker and Jackson? This is honestly almost a perfect fit from that standpoint. But like you mentioned, I think there's probably a little bit unknown there.
I mean, not to transition too soon, but I think if they're going for best pure shooter, I think Mikal Bridges has a pretty awesome case in that regard as well. Maybe positionally is more difficult to get on the court at the same time as those two guys, but I kind of favor him from a pure shooting perspective, just making shots. I think that him and Trae Young probably are the two to me who stand out from that regard, with Porter maybe in third place.
Yeah, you bring up a good point there. I completely forgot about Trae Young, to be honest. But looking at, I imagine his pluses are going to pop off the page, but like we mentioned, his negatives will as well. But you have any final points with Michael Porter? Because looking at, I think he's a plus shooter. He has at least some upside defensively that could intrigue the Suns. But is there anything that maybe pulls you back from, if they were to land three or four, why Porter isn't the guy?
Yeah, I think it would just be, to me, honestly, the biggest thing there is just the fit with Bender and or Chris, and just kind of what he, the decisions that drafting somebody like Porter would force you to make about the rest of the roster. I don't think personally that I'm ready to really make drastic changes like that unless an awesome opportunity comes along for the Suns. And I don't necessarily think Porter, the opportunity to draft Porter, is one that should carry over that much weight into the rest of the roster. I think picking a player who maybe fits a little bit better with everybody and can be a part of the team that's, you know, already been built, kind of, I would favor that route a little bit more. But maybe that's not how the front office is looking at this at all. That's just kind of my opinion.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad you brought that up as well, because you kind of perfectly transitioned over to Mikal Bridges, because he's honestly probably the best shooter in this class with Trae Young, like you mentioned. And I think even more so than Michael Porter, just because he's had 3 years of seasoning at Villanova. And that's kind of an underrated fact with Bridges, because I feel like, I know you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast how you really can't undervalue his success at Villanova. So how pro-ready is Mikal Bridges at being under Jay Wright for 3.5, 4 years? And I feel like, honestly, outside of Josh Jackson, he's probably the best pro-ready defender in the last couple years.
I think, that Bridges' defense is, it's almost tough, because one of the things that I was frustrated with on occasion, I mean, it didn't really come to fruition because they won a championship, and any concerns that people had didn't really ended up not mattering because of how dominant they were offensively, really. But defensively, I was frustrated that they didn't always have a great rim protector on the court. Amari Spellman, a big body, and I think he played defense fine. He was a good rebounder. But I didn't feel like watching that team that they were just destroying teams defensively. So it almost feels like Bridges could be even more impactful when he's on the court next to better players, somebody like Josh Jackson. But I do think, like I mentioned at the top, like it's just something I feel like people overlook too often, where this guy was a part of a great team for 3 years and earned playing time, became one of the biggest pieces of it and biggest catalyst for their success on both ends of the floor. To me, that combined with the style, which is pretty low usage, just really elite role player type of guy, I can't really think of a better scenario for a team that really just needs a contributor.
Now, we've probably been talking about this for the last few months with Mikal Bridges, but I've been saying a lot, I would pound the table for the Phoenix Suns. I don't know if it's possible now to move up without the Miami pick, or excuse me, the Milwaukee pick, but I feel like if they were to move some assets in, like the Milwaukee pick later on, or the 2020 Miami pick, I feel like Mikal Bridges might be that guy you pair with TJ Warren in a trade, because I feel like, honestly, Mikal does everything that TJ could and even more. And honestly, if they were to get a six man, Mikal makes so much sense, but I don't know how that would work with assets, because I feel like at this point he's going to be a top seven, top eight pick. So this is off topic here, but how do you feel like if they were interested in Mikal Bridges, could they move up to maybe 8 or 10 spots in the draft, or do you think this year in the draft how low it is at the top that many teams aren't going to buy on that?
I think that, yeah, they are in a position of weakness. One aspect we have considered with the trading up is, not only do I think it's unlikely that a team with the opportunity to take one of these top 8 or 9 guys would give up their pick, but I also think that asking price is probably going to be steeper as a result. So it maybe just seems like the talent in the middle, that maybe, you know, those teams are more likely to just kind of stick and try to draft a higher upside guy at 15 that could end up being better. But I mean, the real question for me is, if they were to do something like that, or even if maybe they fall so far, I don't know, but if they were to fall to 4 and they really love Bridges, what I said before in the Porter section we were doing is, I don't know how positionally Bridges actually fits. I think he'd be crazy to watch defensively paired with Josh Jackson, but I don't think either one of those guys can defend bigs consistently. That's kind of what scares me about that fit.
Perimeter defense, though, I'm glad you brought up Jackson, because I feel like, honestly, those two together would be really fun to watch, and probably be, maybe outside of Philadelphia, would Robert Covington be one of the most up-and-coming young defensive wing combos in the league? And I feel like it makes a lot of sense, because he's a plus shooter, especially per synergy. He's excellent in all catch and shoot and spot categories. So, like I mentioned in the poor section, he's missing, the Suns are desperately missing shooters. So, do you feel like if they were to drop to 4, I know it's the worst case scenario for Suns fans here, but if they were to drop to 4 and they did love Mikal Bridges, how much do you feel like maybe trading back is a possibility?
I don't think that they would do that unless it was a part of some sort of package. Kind of, I guess that's basically what the Bulls did in the Jimmy Butler deal. Or I guess that's what the Wolves did in the Jimmy Butler deal, where they ended up still getting that first rounder back and kind of just ended up moving back as part of that. So maybe that's an option, but I don't think that they would not. I don't think that they would pass up on the talent is really the biggest thing. But at the same time, they're, I think, very aware of the impact that losing has had on the fan base. And we're getting to year eight, but even less than that, where, you know, this is the fourth or fifth season of Ryan McDonough's tenure. They can't trade back in what we've both kind of been calling one of the bigger drafts in franchise history. That would be very bad PR if we're thinking about it from that perspective.
Yeah, and I'm looking at McKilber's his sports reference page right now, and what really pops out to me when you look at it is his true shooting percentage career-wise, 65.6%, which is insane. I know TJ Warren had something close to that his freshman year, but really dipped off his sophomore year at NC State. But do you feel like, just from an efficiency standpoint, is Mikhail Bridges one of the best pure scorers in this, not pure scorers, but pure shooters in this draft, just based off efficiency? He knows where to, he spots up and shoots, or he drives to the rim and just yams on people?
Yeah, I think he really, I mean, it's the shooting for me more than anything. I don't even feel like we really see him drive all that often, except for when, you know, that Villanova team would get out in transition and could do some damage that way. But even then, he was kind of floating out. I think that just the threat of his three-point shot was what opened up a lot of their offense. But when it came to trying to keep track of everybody, which they played kind of five shooters most of the time, it became impossible, and Bridges spotted up open a lot of the time. I think really, though, what stands out for me with his shot is people talk about versatility a lot with shot and shot selection at the college level or for just amateur prospects in general, and he's one of the, I think, unsung guys in that way. I think you saw him the majority of the time taking those open threes when Brunson would drive and the defense just sucked in because it's the National Player of the Year running to the rim. But even when Bridges wasn't wide open, he can do some of that Steph Curry, Devin Booker, like dribble in and out when the defender overruns you, closing out on the perimeter, and then, you know, take a sidestep and nail the three or just over somebody straight up. And then I actually grew to like his post game quite a bit too. I think he has some stuff he can show there, you know, shooting contested jumpers from the post, from the elbow. Maybe not the most efficient shot when he's such an incredible three-point shooter, but it does signify maybe that his offensive game has room to grow.
Now, I'm looking at also with Mikal Bridges, his height and length compared to Michael Porter. It's a lot different. Porter is 6'10 with a 7-foot wingspan, but Mikal Bridges is 6'7 with a 7'2 wingspan, which pops off the page a little bit because usually guys with longer wingspans usually tend to have more immediate success in the league from what I've looked at, especially guys like Donovan Mitchell, who had a +7-inch wingspan compared to his overall height. But do you value guys with, I mean, obviously nowadays it's very important with how versatile the league is, but do you feel like maybe Bridges' value is going to go even higher? Because I feel like maybe we're underselling his possible immediate impact on defense just due to his overall length.
Yeah, I think that I did a piece for FanSided, I don't know, halfway through the season or so, looking at the best, kind of like looking through the years and like how we measure, especially young defenders, kind of the way that wing and big defenders should develop is kind of through the lens of who the most dominant archetype of scorer is in the league. So in the early 2000s or so, Duncan maybe, but I said that Kobe kind of controlled, like Shane Battier, guys like that, who really grew just trying to defend Kobe. I mean, Jordan was the original example. Kobe's kind of similar. And then after that, it was kind of Dirk, I think, where guys like Kawhi Leonard and even Durant himself were, you know, that long wing that could probably play the four nowadays would be the best option against Dirk. And now it's Durant, and whoever can kind of stop Durant or has the best chance of stopping Durant is one of the more valuable types of defenders in the league. I picked, yeah, Robert Covington's one guy I looked at. Brandon Ingram is another, where that length is just so, so important when you see how tall and long these offensive guys are, and especially with what being long on defense has impactfully as a in a switching system, which we saw with Dragan Bender and Josh Jackson in some situations this year. I think that the guys who can do that are going to just continue to become more and more impactful. And so I think with Bridges being so diverse on offense as a shooter and so diverse defensively with the ways he can impact the game, that's why I've just kind of put him up so high recently.
Now, with his potential, I feel like, compared to other guys, like you mentioned, Brandon Ingram, who was, I believe, 18 and a half or 19 at the draft. Josh Jackson was an older one-and-done prospect at 20 years old. Mo Bamba, someone that's also a little older, 20 years old. So I'm looking at Mikal Bridges right now. Like, he's 21 and a half. He'll be 22 by the start of next season. So do you feel like maybe this is a rare case study here, but does he have sort of Victor Oladipo upside where he could be a late bloomer when he's like 23, 24 if he's put in the perfect system?
I mean, I sort of think that the player he is now has the potential, I mean, as he just continues to grow like all players do, plenty of value. I think if you're looking for him to become an offensive like focal point like that, yeah, I mean, it has to take a couple years in my mind because that's just not how he's ever played. But I think that there is that potential. I mean, an article people should read to that end is what Jonathan Jarks wrote, kind of comparing him to Kawhi Leonard and Paul George as far as just archetypally, where those guys who maybe don't have the most filled out offensive games when they come into the league but are incredible on defense, and that allows them to kind of stay on the court and they grow and become suddenly some of the better players in the league as soon as their offense becomes above average because they're so good on defense. I think that kind of impact, that kind of career arc is one you could see from Bridges.
Now, with his offense and his defense, he's obviously less polished, maybe not even so less polished than Porter because he did play 3 years at Villanova, but there's obviously less boom potential, I guess, with his offense. But do you feel like maybe overall that's probably just the main thing that's missing right now? If he gets more of a aggressive side, maybe starts drawing more fouls 2 or 3 years from now, that he's going to be a guy that's looked at, even though, like we mentioned, he's older and redrafts, that he could easily be above guys like Porter and even other big men in the draft who might miss.
Yeah, I think, yeah, the floor is definitely there for him. It's difficult to imagine for me a situation where Bridges isn't on the court right away and has a pretty long career. I think really the only way that happens is if his defense just isn't as versatile as it looks like it should be right now, where he maybe can't defend fours and kind of just becomes a wing defender. But even, you know, now those guys, DeAndre Liggins can't shoot a lick and he's on a team every year. What's on the Cleveland Cavaliers for almost a whole season at one point. So that type of player is just so in demand right now that it's not just a floor thing. I think that there's really, really true value in acquiring an above average version of that type of player. And so I think, you know, the Suns and their fans shouldn't scoff at the idea of if they were to fall to four, taking Bridges. I think some team is going to be really happy with him for a long time, whereas, you know, some of these other guys might fall off a little bit in unexpected ways.
I'm glad you brought that up because I've been kind of curious with my ranking on Bridges. He's bouncing between 8 and 9 right now, but he was up near 6, but I'm moving up Zaire Smith a lot more. He's probably more upside potential than me, so he's above Bridges on my board. But do you feel like maybe with him it's almost a thing where it's the perfect fit for him, or do you feel like maybe it's just if he goes to a system anyways, maybe it's a bad culture system like Phoenix right now, even though we obviously don't know how it's going to play out this summer. But if he goes to a bad roster fit, do you think he's still going to be a guy that really just changes the culture for that defense where he lands?
I could easily imagine him earning playing time pretty much wherever he ends up. I think one example that comes to mind for me is Justin Jackson from North Carolina last year, who got drafted by the Kings. And you mentioned a bad culture situation. I think that, especially prior to this league, one of the better examples of a one we didn't ever want rookies to have to go through. And they maybe are changing that, but this year he earned playing time like crazy. I mean, especially once they stopped playing their veteran players, the Suns didn't really play them at, I think, one more time after they made that flip, traded George Hill and whatnot. But from that point on, Justin Jackson played like 38 minutes every time I would check a box score for them. And I think just that he's probably the closest to Bridges, with probably not as much talent, but that type of player, the best example from last year's draft. And UC, he came right into a team, and there was no better option but to just play him because of the value he provided on both ends. So I think that that's a good example of what you could see with Bridges, no matter where he ends up. I do worry, though, that maybe the Suns are one example where having a guy like Josh Jackson kind of has a built-in buffer for him really reaching his potential. So, you know, the Suns would have some figuring out to do as far as the how lineups would work with those two guys. But I just think you're not going to be able to keep Bridges off the court.
From a player comp point of view, I'm interested in your thoughts on how you view Bridges as a prospect, because I know, like we mentioned, he's 21 and a half years old. But are there any sort of prospects in the NCAA that are playing now in the pros that make a lot of sense for a comp for him? Because I know I also want to get your thoughts, maybe as a second part to this question, on the Jonathan Jerks piece that he wrote. Do you believe those comparisons to Paul George and Kawhi are hyperbolic, or do you think they're actually spot on?
I mean, I think they're hyperbolic. I think his point to me seemed like it was just that there is always the potential for somebody who has that floor on defense and as a shooter, where if all you're counting on them to develop is a better feel on offense and maybe some playmaking, then, which Kawhi doesn't even really have. Kawhi, it was mostly just becoming the best defender in the league, basically, and then creating enough efficient offense, basically just in isolation for the most part, and as a shooter, where he became one of the better players in the league. But for Paul George, it was some of that off the bounce passing and stuff that raised his game. If it's just that incremental change on offense that is necessary for these guys to become some of the most valuable all-NBA type talents, then you have to consider that when you're considering taking somebody like Bridges. That's, I think, part of the reason that these guys are so kind of exciting to me. And then, I don't know, comp-wise, I don't think either one of those guys are realistic enough because of the fact that they did make those improvements. It's not always going to happen. But I think, you know, as more of a baseline comp, I think Trevor Ariza is pretty solid.
Oh, I like that one.
I mean, that's not really the most creative. I think I've seen him and Shane Battier the most. But I think that kind of gets at the amount of value. Both of those guys started on championship-level teams in the peaks of their career. So, you know.
From a Phoenix point of view, though, because I wanted to bring us back to them, because every time that we were at the games, we saw when Devin Booker was going in isolation or off pick and roll that the entire defense at some points, all five eyes would be on Devin Booker, and it leaves ample opportunities for guys like Mikal Bridges, who would be drafted to Phoenix, to have wide open space in the corner. So do you feel like maybe that's a thing that entices the Suns on Bridges? Because if all eyes are focused on Devin Booker or even Josh Jackson next year, he's going to be a guy that consistently hits those corner threes at a really elite percentage.
I think it definitely, I mean, it has to be something the Suns look at. And so they have two picks. So that's, you know, maybe makes it so they don't feel the pressure to do it at the very top. But I think if you can kind of kill two birds with one stone, like you can with Bridges, where you're getting some much needed defensive support for Booker, as well as a pressure valve on offense, I think that has to appeal to you. But with the upside available at the top and the Suns still kind of needing a second star, I do sort of feel like it's more likely that they lean elsewhere. But I just, you know, I think that there's an opportunity for Bridges to become just as valuable as those guys.
Now, this seems like a weird question to ask, because obviously the teams at the top usually just take huge home run swings. But do you feel like a team that just needs consistent playing time, they can't really swing and miss on this type of guy in the top four? Do you feel like maybe a guy like Mikal Bridges makes more sense in that standpoint, that really if they were to go maybe an upside play, maybe get Mitchell Robinson at 16, or even a guy like Anthony Simons at 16, who makes – it's a home run swing for sure, but maybe it's less of a thing to worry about if you take a guy like Michael Porter at number four?
Yeah, I think – I imagine that it'll go that way. I don't really know if there's too much of a home run swing in the top, which is a little bit lucky for them. There's not one of these guys where you're very worried that they just completely plummet. I don't know. DeAndre Ayton is one example, but I think that they're lucky that they're going to be able to kind of pick safe regardless. So you can kind of make the pick more about the skills that you're coveting or the fit than trying to make sure that you don't pick the guy who flames out. I mean, obviously one of these guys isn't going to be aren't going to be very, very elite players. Like, it looks like they all will. That's never how the draft works, but there's a lot of guys who I think can help the team. And so, you know, maybe they do feel more comfortable taking somebody, you know, like Bridges that they feel is more immediate contributor, even somebody like Porter, who probably is the same, and then taking that swing at 16. I think that just as a general draft thing, I think that's certainly kind of protects them a little bit.
And one more point I want to bring up before we go to our debate comp and who is the better fit for the Suns at number four, however they land in the top four. What's your thoughts on, I'm glad you brought it up, because I feel like there's a lot of safe guys, and there's a lot of, like we mentioned, home run swings like Mohamed Bamba, DeAndre, and there's more safe guys like Mikal Bridges, even Luka Doncic probably has a super high floor. So how did the Suns weigh that? Because I know it's going to be a thing at the top that I know a lot of people are going to say Ayton could be a bust, Doncic could be a bust, but how much do you think that floor matters to them?
I think it should matter a decent amount because maybe not. I don't know. I always really struggle with this. I wrote a column and like before I probably knew enough to really try to argue the point about how teams at the very top who are consistently in the lottery should swing higher. And I don't really know if that's necessarily always true. A lot of people push back on Twitter and stuff to me when I wrote that, and I think it's just situation by situation. I think that the Suns, you know, as much as it seems like there's pressure on them, they have two what looks like will be above average starters on their team already. So maybe there really isn't as much pressure for them to get a generational talent like we think. I mean, they have trade assets, right? They have the goods to improve their roster outside the draft. So maybe they look at the draft and they see somebody like, you know, Mikal Porter, both, and think, wow, I mean, if that guy's just like a solid contributor who can play his role, maybe Porter has more upside than that. But either way, maybe that's fine. And then they, you know, start thinking about how else they can improve and reach for that really, really high level guy. I don't know. I mean, it could go either way. I mean, I think if it's me, I think that there's options that kind of give you a little bit of both, like Doncic and Jaren Jackson, and even maybe Trae Young could be considered that, where the floor isn't, there's not as much of a space between floor and ceiling that you're kind of crossing your fingers. It's really a pretty safe bet that you're going to get a valuable guy at that spot. So maybe, you know, because there's options like that, I don't even think they have to worry about it with the best lottery odds. But overall, I it's always tough for me to kind of weigh that. What do you think?
Yeah, honestly, I feel like I almost agree with you on every single point because you have to value those picks. I feel like, honestly, it's probably safer to take a guy like Luka Doncic at the top because, like you mentioned, he has a very high floor, and I feel like if you were to go maybe 16 and take a swing on one of those high school guys, makes a lot more sense from, like you mentioned, the draft value standpoint. I feel like that's how a lot of GMs usually work on that as well. So I guess I wanted to ask you one final point on these two guys, and it relates to their overall fit and their overall just your preference on who you'd rather have for the Suns. So would you rather have Mikal Porter Jr. with a more upside and maybe probably more upside as a scorer as well, or do you go with a safe bet Mikal Bridges to give you an immediate two-way impact?
I think for the Suns, it's Porter for me. After all that arguing I did on Bridges' behalf, I still think for what the Suns need, I think he's a better fit. He probably is going to be a better offensive player as far as just pure scoring ability goes. And, you know, the questions are maybe a little bit bigger, but they can kind of afford that at the point in the rebuild that they are, where they're still not, you know, near the playoffs. They were just the very worst team in the league. Despite all the hopes we have for this summer, that's the reality. They're still not like at the Sixers level or Celtics level of trying to convert those assets into win now pieces. So to me, you can afford that a little bit more. And I think Bridges, I do like him better as a prospect. He's higher on my board, but I think, you know, for the Suns, it's Porter, and I think they should feel good if they get the opportunity to bring that kind of a guy in.
Yeah, I agree with you as well. I think Bridges is the higher floor guy as far as being an immediate impact, but I feel like if the Suns were to drop to 3 or 4 and Mikal Porter was near the top of their board, I wouldn't mind at all. I would go Mikal Porter as well over Mikal Bridges just because his offense potential is super high. Even if he's not maybe a Kevin Durant type of player, he's a guy that's maybe could average 20 points per game right off the bat if his shot immediately transits to the next level. So I guess I wanted to ask, I'm glad you brought it up because I'm actually going to ask one more question for you in today's podcast. I know we have our answers for Mikal Porter Jr. for both of us, but with the 76ers' success in the playoffs, the Philadelphia 76ers, I wanted to ask your thoughts on just their playoff success. And there's honestly probably a heavy odds they could be a finals contender this year if Cleveland starts really messing around and not looking that good. So How close are the Suns to a team like Philadelphia? I know they're obviously super far away. There's a team of 52 wins and a team of 21 wins, but do you feel like the Suns could take a gigantic step forward towards being a competitive team this summer? Or how should the Suns go about when you look at studying teams like Philadelphia, OKC, Golden State?
Yeah, I think, I mean, they're on their way as far as versatility and talent goes. I think that's the same reason that I key into Bender every time we kind of get into the weeds of debating who sticks around long term. Is of all the guys on the roster, I think Bender still has, well, besides Booker and Jackson, I think he still has the potential to become one of the guys that helps the team take the leap a little bit more than anyone else. But I mean, I'll defend Devin Booker for a long time against people who try to say that random role players that happen to be younger than him are better for I don't know what reason, because they play for a slightly better team or don't have to take as many shots or whatever the reason that people think Torian Prince might be better than Devin Booker is. But he's not Joel Embiid. He's not Ben Simmons. He's probably not even Dario Saric. He's probably not even Markelle Fultz. I mean, at their comparative peak. So, I mean, Booker would probably be the third or fourth best player on the Sixers right now. To put it into perspective, that's tough. You know, they don't have that guy. And so whether that comes in trade or the draft this summer or not at all, I think that that's the reason that there's so much pressure on this summer and why it really, really matters that they get this pick, at least find a guy who's going to be on his way there.
No, as we all know, it's the most important summer, I believe, in the 51 seasons for the Suns. It's going to be year 51 next year. And I think they have the best odds to get the number one pick for the first time in franchise history. So we'll see how that goes with the lottery about 2 weeks away in Chicago. So it'll be interesting to see how that falls. But I appreciate you guys listening in today's podcast. We covered Mikal Bridges and Michael Porter for you. We both sat Michael Porter Jr. in the end just due to his offensive upside and the overall fit in Phoenix with Josh Jackson, Devin Booker. But I appreciate you guys listening. I'll be back with you guys Monday for another episode.